Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases being submitted this afternoon, and we're going to have a panel change between the two cases for which we're hearing oral argument. For this first case, on my left is Justice Gabriel, and on my right is Justice Meyer, and we will be the panel for the first case. All right, let's call the first case, and we'll proceed. All right.
Please the court, Ms. Pauser. Justice, this case is about the placement of the definition of ordinary care before the liability question in a case of a premise liability where the plaintiff is an invitee, and whether or not that was a comment on the law causing a shift of the burden and causing an improper rendering of a judgment. This case, Mr. Mears was a plaintiff. She was an invitee at Mr. Dean's home where she worked as a domestic worker for approximately 10 years and was directed to go up into the attic and retrieve a table. During that time period, while she was up there, she fell through the roof and into the garage. This accident occurred in April 2008, tried the case in March 2013. As you know, with the invitee, her knowledge of the dangerous condition is not relevant to the issue of liability. That has been the law of Texas since Parker v. Highland and the progeny from there down. In this case specifically, the judge, over the objection of counsel, placed ordinary care specifically for Alicia Ramirez above the liability question, instead of, as the law says, is that it can only go to the proportionate responsibility. And further, during closing arguments, opposing counsel argued successfully over the objection of counsel under tab 5, page 74, in the closing arguments was, you need to judge her by what she knew at the time of the accident, because it would be unfair to judge Mr. Dean but by what he knew at the time of the accident and not hold her to the same standard. Now, in this particular case, the defendant had pled affirmatively the issue of contributory negligence. And I would submit to the court that although it is a affirmative defense, that still goes and does not obviate the fact that she's an invitee and still goes to the fact question of the proportionate responsibility. Cases from this court and other cases have said that the fact that the invitee is aware of the dangerous condition does not relinquish the duty of the possessor from stating or warning of the dangerous condition or correcting it. And based on that, we believe that the judgment was improper. The pattern jury charge, I will tell the court, I don't think gives much enlightenment to this area and therefore is not guidance. The broad form was used, but specifically ordinary care was broken down for the plaintiff and for Mr. Dean above his the liability question.
You're not complaining about how the issue was submitted concerning Mr. Dean's negligence, correct?
Well, Your Honor, that's a good point. I would argue that on question number one, the liability, that it included Ms. Ramirez's name, and it should not have. On the liability question, it should have only had the line for Mr. Dean. By including Ms. Ramirez's line name as well, it placed the burden on her to prove that she did not have the knowledge, which is improper.
How do you ever submit the issue of contributory negligence?
Contributory negligence, well, first of all, you have the primer that whether or not he was negligent would be a yes or no, whether or not he knew, whether or not he failed to correct it, whether he failed to warn. It's a simple yes or no. If they say no, then there's no proportionate responsibility. But if the jury was to answer yes, you would move down to proportionate responsibility where the contributory negligence, according to law, would be factored in.
They did answer no as to him unanimously, correct?
That what they did is said yes for Alicia Ramirez.
They did not say no for Mr. Dean?
They did say no for Mr. Dean. And by saying what it was argued was that how can you hold Mr. Dean to that standard when the plaintiff, the invitee, Ms. Ramirez, knew of the same dangerous condition? That's improper. Her knowledge is not relevant as an invitee to the question of liability, only to proportionate responsibility.
Okay, I tried to find the pattern jury charge this morning in our library, and our library is deficient, or it wasn't in there. So how does the pattern jury charge handle this differently?
It gives no guidance as to ordinary care. It doesn't specific. It does not reference the Parker v. Highland, the Department of Transportation versus Payne. It doesn't delineate that as an invitee that their knowledge does not apply to liability. It only applies to proportionate responsibility. Which, if that is the case, then there's no difference between a licensee and a invitee.
And so I'm hearing you that at question one, you're suggesting that only Mr. Dean's negligence be submitted.
Correct.
Maybe I'm going to parrot what Justice Gabriel asked. Where is the question where you determine whether Ms. Ramirez was negligent, since certainly there's got to be a preliminary question of yes or no and not just go directly to a percentage question, because you wouldn't get to the percentage question if she was found to be not negligent.
Your Honor, I would agree with you to the sense of argument, but I will tell you that case law is that her knowledge of the dangerous condition cannot be used in liability. And it can only be applied in the proportionate responsibility. By saying that she was negligent in the liability question says that she had knowledge of it. There's no other way you can get to her being negligent unless you say she had knowledge of it.
Well, I mean, I used to do Walmart cases, and they would all be slip and falls on baby oil, and you'd submit the premises question as to Walmart, and then you would submit the question of the person that slipped and fell about were they aware of it, did they see it, could they have avoided it? I mean, that was your thrust of your argument, was it was in plain view and you should have seen it and you didn't use ordinary care. So what am I missing here?
Well, correct, and I don't disagree with you, but that would go to proportionate responsibility, not to liability under the law.
I know, but first you'd have to ascertain if the person that slipped in the baby oil was negligent, because if they answered no, if she wasn't negligent, she couldn't have seen it. It was clear. It wasn't discernible by a person pushing a cart. You'd never get to proportional responsibility because she wasn't negligent.
Well, and Judge, I guess my response would be then the question needs to be broken down. The first question is whether or not the defendant was negligent. And then
right.
You can do a second question on the
okay.
plaintiff. But by saying, holding the plaintiff to the same standard as what was argued as the possessor, the defendant, saying if she knew, how can you say that he should have known? If she didn't know, how can you say that he should have known, which is improper?
But if the jury found unanimously that Mr. Dean was not negligent, which they did, how can we find harm?
Find harm, Your Honor, because placing the ordinary care of Ms. Ramirez above the liability question, and specifically Ms. Ramirez in a separate question from Mr. Dean, where she has no duty, as an invitee, her knowledge has no bearing on...
I understand that part of your argument. But Mr. Dean's negligence was submitted properly using the proper definition of ordinary care in this type of case. It was submitted properly, and the jury found that he was not negligent. So whether that instruction was in the right place or should have been there at all, I'm still questioning how that rises to the level of harm.
Well, Your Honor, I would say that if you bootstrap the argument of opposing counsel that if she didn't know, how would he have known? And the fact that they said no to him and yes to her, that was improper, because her knowledge is not relevant on the issue of liability.
I guess what Judge Gabriel is saying is, let's say that they had submitted like you think they should have, which I perceive is one question for Dean with and then a separate question with negligence and ordinary care defined for Ramirez, correct?
If you find, yes.
Right. But if they answered the first question no, which they did, the second question becomes immaterial. And I'm not, I guess I'm not following either on, once he's no and he's correctly submitted, whether it's a separate question or as your position is, incorrectly put in the first question, the game's over.
And I don't disagree. The problem with it is putting Ms. Ramirez, the plaintiff, and the defendant in the same category in the same question.
I'm hearing you.
I believe that is improper, because that is using the standard that's under the law improper, because if you can't argue if she didn't know, how do you expect the possessor to know, Mr. Dean? That's improper, because you can't use an invitee's knowledge on the liability question.
All right.
Mr. McDaniel, the language in question one that we're looking at?
Yes, Your Honor.
Inquires about negligence if any of the person or parties named below. And then it specifically directs the jury's attention to the condition of the premises and Craig Dean's knowledge and his exercise of ordinary care, but does not inquire as to either the knowledge of or the actions of Alicia Ramirez. Did you submit, I didn't see that you submitted a different form of this question to the trial court at the conference on the charge?
That is correct, Your Honor.
What you said in the attachments that you made to the appellant's brief was that your position to the trial court judge was, I'm simply saying that you should delete Alicia Ramirez from the issue.
Yes, and as well as move the ordinary care regarding Alicia Ramirez.
Right. How would you, I didn't see that there was a specific discussion in the charge conference about how the issue of contributory negligence should be submitted in this case. Did I miss that, or it's just not there?
Well, the contributory negligence is an affirmative defense.
I understand where it is. I'm asking you if there was a discussion at the charge conference about how to submit contributory negligence differently than what was put in this issue number one in the way that the trial judge formulated the charge.
And I don't have a direct answer other than I believe when I responded in the charge conference, I said that ordinary care and Mrs. Ramirez's knowledge should be considered under the question of proportionate responsibility.
All right. Thank you, sir.
So your position is contributory negligence wasn't your issue. So you don't have to submit it. You only have to object to an incorrect submission. Is that what you're saying?
I believe that's correct. And then in the charge conference, I said if the jury was to consider contributory negligence, it would only be under proportionate responsibility, not liability.
Okay.
How would the issue of proportionate responsibility have been reached in this trial with the jury's unanimous answer to the question posed as to Craig Dean's liability being that he committed no negligence?
Well, and Your Honor, I agree with that thought, but it goes back to, I believe, as the argument, closing argument, the placement of the ordinary care and the placement of Ms. Ramirez's name in the liability question caused the improper answer to that question.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so I'm beginning to clue in here now. So you're saying that because Alicia, for some reason, because Alicia Ramirez was included in this question, it caused the answer to Dean to be no?
I believe that, along with the placement of the ordinary care specifically for Ms. Ramirez above the liability question, and the argument of counsel over objection that said, how could Mr. Dean have known if Ms. Ramirez didn't know? And that goes to her knowledge.
Like, the answer to that question is real obvious. It's his house, not hers.
But the definition of ordinary care as it pertained to Alicia Ramirez was included in the section entitled definitions, correct?
That is correct.
And you didn't bring a point concerning the closing argument in your brief to the court today, did you?
Attach the closing argument?
No, you didn't make that a point of error. You didn't, you're not asserting that here today.
And I asserting that the
closing argument in and of itself was error that we should take any action upon.
It is included in our brief.
As one of your issues?
As part of one of our issues, issue number one.
Before you quit, and I know your light's out, and I'm sorry to prolong your time, and we'll have to,
we'll get some extra
we can give
time.
Some additional time to the appellee. There is, you are not objecting, if I'm reading your issues correctly and your brief, that the definition of ordinary care as it is phrased concerning Alicia Ramirez was an incorrect statement of her ordinary care duty. You're merely objecting that it was in the wrong place in the charge.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, sir. I think I understand.
Further? All right. Thank you. Let's give the appellee 3 extra minutes.
Thank you, Justice.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. We're here on an appeal from the 33rd Judicial District Court in Parker County. Alicia Ramirez sued my client, Craig Dean, under a theory of premises liability when she fell through the sheetrock of Mr. Dean's attic and onto the garage floor. The jury returned a unanimous verdict that Mr. Dean was not negligent and found unanimously that Ms. Ramirez was. Plaintiff has complained upon repeal that there was an improper jury charge, as you've discussed, but she's also complained on appeal that there should have been additional jury instructions and that the findings of the jury were against the weight of the evidence. Your Honors, I'm going to ask you to affirm the trial court's judgment for 3 reasons. Number one, there is absolutely no evidence to suggest that there was any unreasonably dangerous condition, let alone that Mr. Dean knew or should have known of that dangerous condition. Number two, there is evidence to show that Ms. Ramirez was contributory negligent. There is testimony that I cited in my brief, evidence admitted at trial. Ms. Ramirez told her doctor that she was ambulating in the attic, missed a stud, and fell through the sheetrock. At trial testimony, she testified that she wasn't really sure where she was and where she was standing. And number three, Your Honor, even if the court finds that Ms. Ramirez was somehow prejudiced by this insertion of ordinary care in the definitions rather than 2 separate instructions, such error is harmless because the jury found that Mr. Dean was not negligent. Going back to the point that was not addressed by appellant submitted and made a point on appeal that he should have definitions of open and obvious and concealment. The trial court properly denied to include such definitions because there was absolutely no evidence adduced at trial that there was any defect, any dangerous condition, let alone that there was a dangerous condition that was open and obvious or that somehow that condition had been concealed. At trial, photographs were introduced into evidence, which photographs were taken after the area of the sheetrock had been repaired. But both plaintiff and defendant testified that the general appearance of the attic had not changed since the time of her fall, The jury was allowed to appreciate the photographs and appreciate the fact that Ms. Ramirez fell through sheetrock under a light in an area of the attic that was not covered by any insulation. Your Honor, with respect to his request, and which the courts have taken point on the contributory negligence issue, a trial court has discretion to submit the jury charge based upon the evidence and the pleadings. In this case, as the court knows from the review of the record, the charge conference was quite long, and it covered a lot of issues. But one of the issues the trial court kept coming back to was that the jury charge was in substantial compliance, and in compliance, I should say, with the broad form submission requirements of our Supreme Court, and also addressed the pleadings for which there was evidence. In this case, Your Honor, the pattern jury charge, I believe Chapter 65, but I'm not sure, Your Honor, says that when the contributory negligence of the plaintiff is at issue, two sets of instructions or definitions for ordinary care should be submitted. And the pattern jury charge example showed that the submission of ordinary care instruction with respect to the defendant should be with question one. And it showed that the definition of ordinary care with respect to Ms. Ramirez should be in the instructions. And that's exactly what the trial court did, Your Honor. There was no error in his submission. Even if the court finds that the trial court somehow abused its discretion and wording the submission the way they did, there is no error because the jury unanimously found that Mr. Dean was not negligent. Therefore, it never reached the issue of Ms. Ramirez's contributory negligence as a percentage to Mr. Dean. They simply found that Ms. Ramirez was responsible for her own fall. For these reasons, Your Honors, we would ask that you affirm the jury of the unanimous jury verdict and allow Mr. Dean to move on from this situation.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May I be excused?
Oh, you might want to wait till his rebuttal.
Justice, I have no further argument. If there's any more questions, I'll be happy to answer those.
Questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Your case has been submitted. And hopefully in the not too distant future, we'll receive an opinion from this court and this panel on your appeal. All right, as I said, we're going to change panels, so we will have a short recess.